We're on Daf Pei Aleph Amud Beis, and we're up to Omar Abaye. It's about halfway down the Amud, and if you see Tosus on your side, on your right side, V'nichu, one line below that, Omar Abaye. Parfiso, we said, was a flower pot which is perforated. Hoel V'asol Yodon, since we mentioned it in one context, Lema Be Milsa. Let's say something else about it. Hayamunach al gabi karka. If this flower pot is on the ground, such that it's being nourished directly from the ground, like anything that's planted in the ground, ve'nicho, and he lifted it up al gabi yisedos, and he put it down on top of little holders, and now he's supporting it above the ground, is mechayev mishum tolish. If he does this on Shabbos, this is called oker davar migidulo, and he's chayev for violating the Shabbos. It can no longer nourish from the ground. Now, let's just point out that we're talking about an otzitz nakuv. And otzitz nakuv, even if you lift it up from the ground, it still nourishes from the ground. So it's hard to believe that this is called Baleches Tolish. And furthermore, even if I would assume that it's no longer nourishing from the ground, I'm not sure if this is called Tolish because it was never actually in the ground. It was lying, resting on the ground. If you take a look at Tosus, he says, the word chayev here in Abaye is makas mardus midrabbanan. And this you'll find in Rashi, Tosus, and many other Rishonim, that Abaye is using a borrowed term here, which we find frequently, but rarely, but somewhat frequently in Shas, that mechayev means for violating an isur drabbanan. In other words, this looks like tolish. It's technically not tolish for various reasons. Then Abaye says, "Hayamunach al gabi yisedos." If it was in a situation of being supported above ground, v'niach al gabi karka, he lifted it up and put it down directly on the karka. Chay mishum notea, notea and zorea, two co-ovals, and he's planting. Usually, notea is used for ilonos and zeraim or for zera. Here, he's already got a growth, a plant in the vase. So, in essence, when he sets it down on the ground, that's called notea. It's like planting the tzemach. And once again, the word chayev, we should point out, is for a violation of a derabbanon. And this is notea midrabbanon. It looks like notea because he sets it down on the ground. It now nourishes directly from the ground. Interesting that Tosfos has another proof here that this could not be a chiv doraisa. He says, midashari reish lakish. I'm not sure exactly what he means by midashari reish lakish, although Rav Papi derived such a conclusion from a statement of Reish Lakish regarding a Tzor Sha'olubo Asavim. Reish Lakish's case was a case where, since on a Daraisa level this was not called Tolesh, therefore Mishum Kovet Abrios, they allowed him Muto L'Kaneach Bo. And in fact, there he didn't even directly or deliberately pull out the asavim. It might have happened. So that's a davar shein miskamin. The whole deal is the rabbanon. They were mati mishum kovod abrios lekaneach bo. And Rav Papi wanted to derive conclusions about lifting a perforated flower pot. And the question was whether it's considered detaching, and we could move it, so it's not called detaching. And and it's not called Tolish. But does that mean that according to Reish Lakish it's Mutter? The Gemara actually says you cannot derive conclusions from Reish Lakish about being Matir the carrying of a parfisa, because in the case of Reish Lakish, the heter was Litzorech Kavod Abrios. And here, in the case of carrying this, or removing this perforated flower pot, we don't have any element here offhand of Kavod Abrios, as Rav Kana pointed out. So I'm not sure exactly what it means here that Midashari Reish Lakish, maybe it means in the Hava Mina, Rav Papi wanted to derive such a conclusion that there would be a heter even in the absence of Kavod Abrios, maybe for some other reason. In any event, there's no question about it that the Rishonim assume that Abaye here in this discussion about Parfisa, in terms of whether it's Meleches Tolesh or Meleches Notea, is talking about a Drabbanon, because it resembles Tolesh, it resembles Notea. Now, we're going to discuss again the issue about substances that are used for Kinuach. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Osur Lekaneach Becheres. You have a broken piece of pottery, you're not allowed to use it for Kinuach. So the Gemara says, my taima. Oh, and he adds the word b'shabbos. That's critical. Ilei mishum sakona. If we're worried that he might hurt himself because of the, you know, the sharp nature of the shard of this broken piece of pottery, is then afilu b'chol nami. There's no reason why Rav Yochanan would have mentioned that this is also on Shabbos. There's got to be a specific Shabbos reason, not a health reason that would apply the whole week long. Ella mishum kshafim. If you're going to suggest that what happens is that if this piece of pottery has some sort of a shirayim, a sort of a vestige of the waste products, then somehow if it gets into the wrong hands, this piece of pottery, a witch can harm a person. He says once again, afilu b'chol nami, this has nothing to do with Shabbos. Ela mishum hasharas nimen. It must be that there's a problem here, meleches gozes, which is called in English shearing, and we're afraid that if he wipes himself with something so sharp, he might cut off hairs that grow in that area near the rectal opening. So the Gemara doesn't like that answer either, because Dovashem is Kavinhu. He has no intention of cutting out these hairs. And assuming we hold like Reb Shimon, which the Gemara is going to have to prove later on, then a Dovashem is Kavin in this case would certainly not be prohibited. Omaluhu Rav Nosan Bar Oshia Gava Rabba Omar Milsa. If Rabbi Yochanan, who's a great man, said something about this pottery, then name a timer. We have a commitment to try to find an explanation for it. We have to understand it. So the Gemara says, Lo mi boy b'chol di asur. Aval b'shabes hold the ika toras kliel of shapir dummy. The chiddush here of Rav Yochanan, we would have thought that on Shabbos we can certainly be more relaxed and lenient. And the reason for that is that during the week, when there are other options for him besides these shards, these pottery shards, then certainly the Chazal would have said that we should avoid using them. And if we have a chash of kishuf, that somebody, he may be harmed by a witch, let's avoid this and take advantage of other stones. But on Shabbos, it's hard to find other stones. But as far as these shards are concerned, Ika Torah's clear love. Now, presumably, the reason why it's a Torah's Kli is because he designated it for use. Alternatively, it could be the shard is not like an Evan, and you don't even need to designate it for use, because there's no Mukta. And the reason for that, he can use it to perhaps, depending on whether it has a little bit of a receptacle to hold some amount of water. Well, let's say you have something very hot, like a piece of coal, gecholim, he could dig the shard into the gecholim in order to carry the gecholim. Again, not that he would do this on Shabbos, but it does have a function, it does have a Torah's Kli. His alternative to wipe himself would be a stone. And a stone is Mukta. So I might think that in this context of witchcraft, maybe the best, or shall we say the least of all evils, would be to allow him to use this shard of pottery rather than use a stone which is mukta, whereas during the week he has many options to use stones. There's no isur mukta during the week. Mashmalon, Rabbi Yochanan tells us that it's usur even on Shabbos. Now, I'm not sure why. It could be because the sakana it's usur even on Shabbos, and that's going to override and trump any sort of heter of tiltul, meaning forget about the fact that it's not mukta, but nevertheless we have a danger element here, or we have a witchcraft element, and those factors trump the need to use this. So at the end of the day, it's quite possible that if he doesn't have access to anything but this shard, because of the possibility that he might be ill affected by this use of the shard, we would rather he use mukta. Rav Masni le mishuma sharas nimin. Rav, on the other hand, went back to the original interpretation of Yochanan, the problem of gozes, that he might inadvertently cut the hairs near the rectal area and then violate the isur of gozes. And if you'll ask a stira between two statements of Rabbi Yochanan, how could me, Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, also l'kaneach b'cheres b'shabbos, because we're afraid he'll cut off hairs, alma davar sheinu miskaven asur, meaning Rabbi Yochanan accepts the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, in davar sheinu miskaven, that if he unintentionally cuts off hairs, it's asur, v'omar Rabbi Yochanan loka kistam mishnah. Rav Yochanan has a principle that we always accept la halacha, a Mishnah that's anonymous. Tonight we have an anonymous Mishnah in Masechta Nazir that says, Nazir chofef u'mefasfes, avelo sorek. A Nazir is allowed to rub his hair with his hands. He can disentangle the hairs in his hand, in his head by hand, and if, heaven forbid, he cuts any of his hairs off, which is an isur teglachas for nazir, nevertheless he did it as a davar sheinu miskaven. Lo sorek, he can't comb them, because in the case of combing them, he has what's called a psik resha, and it's inevitable that he's going to remove some hairs when he combs. But if he's using his own hands to remove the tangles, the knots, then we don't necessarily assume that it's inevitable that he'll rip out hairs from his head, and that's the Dovr Sheni Miskaven. So the Gemara says at this point you're right. Rabbi Yochanan certainly accepts the shita of Rabbi Shimon and Dovr Sheni Miskaven, and it's mutter, like it's mutter for Nazir by hand to disentangle his hair or rub his hair. And Dovr Sheni Miskaven is mutter, and therefore it cannot be that the problem with the shard is, as we wanted to suggest, Hashoras Nimin, because Hashoras Nimin would certainly be a Dovr Sheni Miskaven. And the Gemara doesn't want to assume that it's a psik resha, they'll definitely cut off the hairs around the rectum area. So therefore, we have to go back to the original understanding of Rab Nosson, that Rab Yochanan is going to prohibit this on Shabbos for the reasons that it was prohibited on Chol. We'll call it witchcraft, or call it danger to his body. He might injure himself. And Rabbi Yochanan wants to be mechadish that even on Shabbos, when there's a little bit of a push to compel us to be matir, be more lenient, because his other options would entail a violation of Isur Muktzah, nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan says it's asur. Mike Shofim, why would using shards from a broken pot of pottery, what does that have to do with witchcraft? So the Gemara tells us the following story. Ki hadar of Chizda v'Rav Barafuna havi ka'azla ka'azli bi'arva. So these two great rabbis of Chizda and Rava were traveling on a boat. Amro lahu hahima chenosa. This woman who was an officer in the king's court says to them, Osvan badaihu, I would like to go along. Velo osvua, but they refused to take her along. She was angry about that. Omra I milsa, she recited some sort of witchcraft. Asarta liavra, it means she sort of incarcerated the boat that couldn't move because of this witchcraft spell that it put on her. Amru Inu Milsa, they also recited some sort of a lahash, some sort of a secret word. Maybe they mentioned the name of Hashem, Rashi offers. Perhaps they knew how to put these spells on, and therefore they knew how to take the spells off. And they released the boat. That's called Shayua. Amru Lahu. So she said to them, "My Evid Luchu, what can I do to injure you?" And here we turn to Daf Pei Beis Amud Aleph. Now, she knew that there would be one possibility of zapping them with witchcraft if she can get hold of some sort of a shard that they would have used to wipe themselves. But she declared that Delo Mekanech Lechu Bechaspa, you don't use shards. Velo Kotel Lechu Kina Amonaihu. A kina is a little bug that is in either bed or clothing, and you don't kill those bugs while they're attached to your clothing. You are able to remove this little louse from the clothing and then you kill it. Below Sholof Lechu Yarka V'ochalechu Mikisha the Asir Gina. Ginav comes from the word gino, which is a gardener. A gardener is called a gina. And asir means he tied it up. And sholof means to pull out something. So you don't pull out a vegetable from a bundle that has been tied by a gardener, which is apparently another way that would sort of expose themselves vulnerable to witchcraft. If you were to remove a vegetable from a bundle, like for example a bundle of onions or other vegetables that are tied after they're harvested, then if you would pull out a vegetable from this bundle, one single vegetable, then that would be something that could make them vulnerable to witchcraft. But the rabbis knew the power of witchcraft, and they would never take out or pull out a single vegetable out of a bundle, and therefore what they would do is they would untie the bundle and then take out a vegetable, and that would avoid any danger and exposure to witchcraft. So in any event, we see clearly that being mekaneach b'chaspa could expose you to witchcraft. Now the Gemara talks about the importance of relieving oneself. Omalahu Rav Huna l'Rabba Berei. Rav Huna told his son, "My time lo shchicha kamei de Rav Chizda. Why don't you sit at the feet of Rav Chizda and study by him? The mechadin shmaita, he teaches very sharp. You have a lot to learn from Rav Chizda." Omalah, the answer of Rabba to his father Rav Huna was, "My ezel gabei." In other words, do you want me to go to him more often? Whenever I go to study by him, mosivli b'mili d'alma, he sits me down and he tells me about mundane manners. He doesn't teach me words of Torah. Amali, for example, he told me man d'ayel beis akise, when a person goes to relieve himself in a bathroom, lolesiv behedye, he should not just sit down, like forcefully sit down. Velo litrach tfe, in other words, he shouldn't push himself in order to push out the excrement. He should do it gently. The high karkashta atlas shine yosef. Now, here, Rav Chiz is giving a biology lesson to Rava, and he's telling him about the biology, the structure of the rectum. And literally, it means it's supported by three shinei, shinayim are teeth. So it sits on three teeth. And these are the muscles of the anus. They are external muscles, which are at the end of the anal canal, near the rectal orifice. And the folds of these muscles and the shape arrangement are similar to that of a row of teeth. Dilmish tamta shine de karkashta. You have to avoid this because lest the teeth of the rectum become dislocated. Viosili de sakana. And this could be something dangerous when you sit down forcibly, or when you strain yourself by holding back from eliminating, or instead of holding back, you push yourself to eliminate when you don't have to eliminate, it causes the rectal opening to open wider than it should, and this can cause the muscles to be weakened and to tear, and the rectum itself can protrude into the opening. And this is a condition that could obstruct the rectum and make it impossible to eliminate. Also, danger and infection. I mean, this is a very dangerous business. Amalei Rav Huna said to his son, "Hu asik b'chayi debir yasa, vi'at amrit b'mili di'alma." Rav Chisda is teaching you how to deal with issues that have to do with life and death, and you call that mundane? Kolshkein zil gabei, now that you've told me what he discusses with you, how much more so do I think it's critical that you go study under him? So what is the nature of this kolshkein? And the Ben Ish Chai says that what Rav Huna was telling Rabbah was that even though he's teaching you health matters, these have a remez, an allusion to Divrei Torah. And they're all mishalim for Divrei Torah. And this is a fulfillment of what it says in Pirkei Avos, Yafet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz, which means that you've malbish sometimes Torah into physical Derech Eretz. And therefore, when he says to his son, Asik Bechai Debriyasa, meaning being Osek, you should be Osek B'Torah in a way that it's Malubash in Chaye Brius. Again, these are all deep concepts. Now the Gemara is going to go back to discuss those things that are either Mutter or Asur when you wipe yourself after you eliminate. Hoya Lefanav Tzvar V'Cheres. He has in front of him a small stone or a piece of pottery, a shard of pottery. Rav Huna Omar, Mekanech B'Tzror, V'ein Mekanech B'Cheres. He should not use the shard. And as we discussed before, even in a case where it was Shabbos, and all he has is either a shard or a piece of stone, and we would have thought that he should be allowed to use the shard, because we don't want him to move Mukta, but nevertheless, the Gemara establishes Mekanech B'Tzror. He should use the Mukta and absolutely avoid using Cheres, even though it's not Mukta. So why would we tell you to do Mukta, not non-Mukta? And the answer is, as we learned before, the shard entails certain dangers, whether it be witchcraft, or he might rip his muscles. Rav Chisda Amar Mekanech B'Cheres. Rav Chisda disagrees, and he thinks he should use the object, the shard of pottery that's not Mukta, V'yena Mekanech B'Tzror. Now, it's not clear why Rav Chisda advocates using the shard. Maybe he holds that the shard, as we said before, is not mukta, it's a kli, could be used in various ways that we've discussed, and a stone is mukta. But it must be, we have to add, that Rav Chisda was not worried about any great danger of using the shard. Meisve, the Gemara asks a kasha on Rav Huna from a brisa. The brisa says, "Hayu lefanav tzror v'cheres, mekaneach b'cheres v'ein mekaneach b'tzror." He should opt for the shard and not opt for the stone. To the Rav Huna, is this not an absolute contradiction to Rav Huna? So now the Gemara reinterprets the brisa. Tirgama Raphram, you have to explain, based on Raphram Bar Papa's statement, which he made in front of Rav Chisda, according to Rav Huna, be ogne kalim. Why is the shard preferable to a stone? It's referring to a kind of a shard that's broken off from rims of utensils. Rims meaning those kind of handles that they attach to the pottery, to the pots. And those rims, those ogne, are smooth, they're not dangerous. Stones are preferable. Right, so let's go over the kasha. We said mekanech b'cheres, v'ein mekanech b'tzror, is be'ogne kalin. The brisa prefers a shard, it's smooth and it's not dangerous. Okay, but that's only because it's ognei kelim. Let's say you have a classic shard which has a sharp edge to it, then stones would be preferable, and that's the case that Rav Huna was addressing. Now, what if you have a choice between ha'ilufan of tzror, a stone, and a sovim in grass? And that's machlok between Rav Chisda and Rav Hemnuna. Chana omar mekaneh p'tzror, v'ena mekaneh p'asovim. Chana omar mekaneh p'asovim, v'ena mekaneh p'tzror. What would be the advantage of the grass over the shard, or vice versa? So he says the following. The Eina Makaneach Basovim Mishum Shasovim Lachem Heim. There's a certain moisture to the grass. V'chotchim Es Habos Mazikim Otzo Yoser Mitzror. In this opinion, Asovim are more dangerous than stones. The other opinion is that Makaneach Basovim, because the stone is Hezeko Bor Yoser. Hezeko Bor Yoser. So Asovim is preferable. He says, Lemadi Omerze Eino Sover She Asovim Lachim Chotchim Sabosor. Or the Odia Shlomar. Shafim sovish asovim lachim chotchim sabozim kolmakom ena sakona gdola kemo b'tzror shemesir eshinei akarkashta v'yodah sheikaneach b'asovim yishikaneach b'tzror. So these are all discussions about which is more dangerous, whether it's wet, moist grass or whether it's a stone. So again, the stone, we said, as a rough edge. And one could ostensibly argue that, as opposed to grass, which is a little bit softer, the stone is more likely to injure you, so therefore you might prefer using the grass. On the other hand, sometimes the grass is smooth, and when it comes to sometimes the stones are smooth, and therefore they're preferable to grass. The stones are never entirely smooth, but live grass, which are sharp-edged, will cut into the flesh more than rough stones. That's according to that opinion that prefers to use the grass. Because the stones... what I meant to say was, according to my Diomer, that prefers to use the stones because live grass are sharp-edged and cut into the flesh, more than rough stones. And the stones are preferable, even though they're not entirely smooth. And the other my Diomer holds that stones have to be avoided, and they're more likely to injure than grass. Mesve, the Gemara is now going to ask Akasha on the latter opinion that Asovim is preferable to Tzror. From a Brais, Amakaneach B'Dovar Sheha'ur Sholetes Bo. In other words, he wants to avoid something that's a substance that's flammable, Ha'ur Sholetes Bo. And it would seem that grass would be a classic example of something which is a Dover Sha'ur Sholetes Bo. And if he goes ahead the rice and he says he uses such a flammable object, then Shinov Hatachtonos Noshos, which means the rectum that has those muscles that we discussed before that look a little bit like teeth, might get cut. So this price is completely prohibits the use of grass? Lokasha habalachim habiyaveshim. It depends whether you're talking about moist grass or dry grass. And moist grass is not flammable, and it's softer, and therefore could be used for wiping. But dry grass is dangerous because it might cut into the person's flesh. And dry grass is flammable, and it's indicated by this price that you should absolutely avoid using dry grass. Again, it's interesting because we use paper in our time for wiping. Toilet paper. I mean, these days it's a little rare, but let's say you get toilet paper. Now that seems to be very flammable. We use it even on weekdays. So here it seems that it's a bit dangerous. Apparently, either we, you know, this is either Shomer Psayim Hashem, you know, that like Rabbi Moshe's famous tshuva about smoking it initially, his first tshuva. Or perhaps, you know, there are different types of flammable substances. Not all of them are injurious. Also, we have to consider the fact that our bathrooms are within the house. And since our bathrooms are in the house, not outside the house, then it's unlikely that wiping materials will be found by somebody else. And that takes off the chashash of witchcraft. Anitzrach lefanos v'eino nifne. It's very dangerous if somebody has to relieve himself to eliminate his bowels, make a bowel movement, and he doesn't do so, and he holds it in. Rav Chisda Ravina have a machlokes, what would be the repercussions of someone who postpones eliminating himself? Chanoma ruach ra shal letisbo, v'chanoma ruach zuama shal letisbo. According to one opinion, the wastes will start rotting in the body, and there'll be an odor that will exit through his mouth. Now, in fancy modern English, that's called halitosis. Ayin Rashi. According to the other opinion, what happens is that these rotting wastes will be absorbed into the tissues of the body, and that'll cause a perspiration that has a bad smell to it. Tanya kemandi oma ruach zua moshal let this bo. We're going to bring a brisa to support the opinion about foul breath. I'm sorry. Tanya kemandi oma ruach Zuamashaletis, but we're talking about bad perspirational odor. Tisanya nitzach l'nikova v'ochel. If he has to go to the body and he eats, go to relieve himself and he eats, doma l'tanur sheisiko al gabi efro. He uses the ashes from the previous heating, from the previous cooking, a second time around, and so he tchilas ruach zoama, beginning of perspirational odor. Hutzach liponos v'ena yochel liponos. If he has to relieve himself, but he's unable to do so, Omar Rav Chisda, yamod v'yeshev, he should stand up and sit down, stand up and sit down. So we're talking now about constipation. He wants to relieve his constipation. And what happens is, by standing up and sitting down, he kind of activates his muscles that lined the interior of the large intestine. It's kind of a squatting situation. And he stimulates those muscles, which brings the excrement forward. Rav Hanan Midarndo Omar, Yistalik Litzdodim, which means he removes himself to the sides. What does that mean? In other words, after trying to eliminate in one spot, he should move to another spot and try a second time. And what that does is it stimulates the muscles of the large intestine. So Rav Hanan is recommending that by moving from one spot to another, between one attempt to go to the bathroom and the other, the walking itself stimulates. And the muscles of the large intestine being stimulated will allow for an elimination. Rav Hamnuna Amar Yimashmesh Bitsrar Bioso Makom. He should take a stone and he should stimulate his anal opening, and that will allow, by manipulating it in that place, it will allow him to defecate. Rabbanan Amri Yasiach Daito. Rabbanan say if he's too anxious and constantly tense about it, he won't be able to move his bowels. He should just distract himself. Amalei Rav Acha Brei De Ravel Rav Ashi Kolshkein Dechi Masach Daite Lo Mafne. If he distracts himself, he certainly will not be able to relieve himself. Amalei Rav Ashi explained it. Yasiach Daite Midvar Macherim. He's reinterpreting it, not that he should relieve himself from the anxiety, but rather he should forget about everything else in life, and he should concentrate exclusively on relieving himself. Omer Av Yirmiyah Midifti, Lididi Chazi Liahutaya. My Gemara often speaks about Ahutaya, a certain Arab that used to travel, and they used to ask him questions. And I noticed the Kam V'Yosef, he was standing and sitting, Adishofach B'Kderei. The Gemara uses a melitza, and the Gemara says until he poured out his pot, which means he emptied his pot, meaning he emptied his body, and the excrement poured out. So he was advocating in favor of that recommendation to stand up and to sit down. And this we can learn from this Arab. Tana Rabbanan. We learned in a brisa, Hanichnas L'Seudas Keva, if he goes in to eat a set meal, a formal meal, and he doesn't want to get up in the middle of the meal to relieve himself, it's going to be a lengthy meal, and it's not proper for a person to leave a formal meal to relieve himself. Is Yahalech Eser Pomim Shal Arba Arba Amos? He should walk 10 times, 4 amos. Each time he walks 4 amos. And between each 4 amos of a walk, for these 10 walks, he should try to relieve himself. The Amila, others have a girsa, Arba Pomim Shal Eser, 4 times he should walk 10 amos each time. So in other words, the longer walks are more efficient. The nifna. And then he'll successfully relieve himself. And nifnas v'yoshev v'komo, and he goes in and he sits in his place. So in other words, he wants to ensure that he has a bowel movement before he sits down for the meal. And he shouldn't be afraid that he'll have to leave in the middle of the meal to relieve himself, because he did this whole process and he stimulated his ability to have a bowel movement, and therefore he cleans himself out before the meal. Because as we said before, it's unseemly for a person to leave a formal meal in the middle of a meal. So he wants to relieve himself before the meal. And this leads us to the last Mishnah in Perek Hamotzi Yayin, which is here on Daf Pei Beis Amud Aleph. So let's learn the last Mishnah. Cheres, the Mishnah says, if he carries earthenware, what is the shear for Meleches Hotzah? Kidei Litein Bein Patzim L'Chavero. In other words, he takes out enough to place between one slat and another. In other words, he's stacking slats, which are beams of wood on the ground, and he needs to fill in the spaces and the gaps between one piece of wood and another. So he puts in small pieces of earthenware so that the weight of the pile does not press pieces into the empty spaces, because that caused them to warp out of shape. He wants them all to be straight, so he has to fill in those gaps, and he uses pieces of earthenware to do so. And that's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kidei Lachtos Bo Es Ha'or. Sometimes when you have a fire going, and you have a coal, and you want to sort of poke the coal, that's called Chitui B'Gcholim, and he needs a certain minimum size piece of earthenware to achieve his Chitui. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kidei Lekabel Bo Revis. In other words, it should be a round piece of pottery such that it could receive a revius of liquid and hold on to it. Omer Rabbi Meir says, Af al pisha ein raya ledavar, zeich ledavar. He's going to quote a pasuk in Yeshayahu Navi to find some sort of an allusion to this whole topic here about earthenware. The prophet is giving tochacha, or Musar, to the Jewish people. They didn't trust in God. They were seeking aid from the king of Mitzrayim. So the pasuk says the following, V'lo yimotze b'mechitaso cheres lachtos esh miyakud. There shall not be found amongst its pieces a shard with which to pick up a fire from the hearth. And this wall, so to speak, of protection that they're seeking from the king of Mitzrayim is going to fall and shatter into nothingness. And not even the smallest piece will be left whole. And Ramey uses this as a mashal for picking up the fire, the use of pottery requiring a small shard to pick up the fire. And that, if you remember, was his sheet about the minimum shear of a piece of pottery. I'm not exactly sure why the Mishnah wedges Rabbi Yossi in the middle here between Rabbi Meir's Shita and his Zechel Adov. That I'm not sure. Amalei Rabbi Yossi comes back and he says, Misham Raya, that's your proof. V'lachsof Maya Mi Geva. Let's read the end of the pasuk. It says, or to scoop up water from a hole. In other words, even a small shard that could be used to scoop up a water, which would give it to significance, won't be available. In other words, everything will be shattered into nothingness. Now, the impression you get is that Rabbi Yossi is more machmir than Rabbi Meir, which means that according to Rabbi Yossi, you can give chashivas and significance to a small piece of earthenware, even if all you can do with it is hold a revius of yayin. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, which he requires the chashivas of poking the flame, he requires a more significant piece of shard, which would be lakula because it would give you a larger shear. I'm not sure yet where Rabbi Yehuda fits into this perspective. I suspect that Rabbi Yehuda perhaps is more machmir. Maybe he has even a smaller shear. That's what we've seen in the past, that Rabbi Yehuda advocates for a smaller shear. Let me just read to you. He says, Cheres kedei litein bein patzim lechavero, she kishemesadrim krushim viamudim zel zevi yesh halal beinem, enicham sham. Vinichim sham shivrei cheres lamalo sachalal shalo yisakmu. And he quotes here in the note that Rashi in Beitza says, "Hayu nosnim krushim meatzei meitz bekosle abatim." So they use these wooden beams to make the walls of the house. Kimizgeret lechalonot ulipsachim, and inside the beams themselves apparently would serve as frameworks for windows and doors. Ubimiskaros elua yasuyos al yidei nesinas krushim, which are called ptsimim, milamala umilamata umishne hatstodim. So they went vertical and horizontal on both sides. Upamim shaloya motse keresh shuberochav kola kosel. And sometimes he needed to use two krushim. In other words, he couldn't find a beam that would cover the entire width of the wall. Hayiminiach shnei krushim zelzeh v'tzarch lo shivam biofen shav shaloya echad gavoa misheni. So the two beams had to be flat and contiguous. One should not be higher than the other. They had to be mamish joined together. Kadesh shlo yu shnei krushim shavim begavham. Shlo yivlod echad meam yosim mechaver. One shouldn't protrude more than the other. And therefore, no saint tact of cheres o evan kadesh lahashvos l'sheni. So that would equal out the two beams. So that's another possibility as to where and how he would use these shards. And he writes, L'chol ha-pirushim, whether you accept Rashi in Beitza or Rashi here, Tzarech lo mishe shiurim shal Rabbi Yehuda katan yose me shiurim shal Rabbi Meir v'shal Rabbi Yossi. So it means the Mishnah is going in decreasing order, you know, starting with the biggest chumrah and the smallest shear, going down to the largest shear, the most lenient shear of Rabbi Yossi. So Baruch Hashem, we were mechaving to this. It's based on Sfas Emes, who compares Rabbi Yehuda in a consistent way to his chumrah in Shiurei Otzar Shabbos. He always takes the more chumrah and the smallest shear. However, the Sfas Emes has a kasha on this from a Rashi in Baba Basra, because, well, forget about Rashi in Baba Basra for a moment, but just remember the Gemara back on Daf Pei, that the Gemara concluded that although Rabbi Yossi, relative to the Chacham, is more machmir, but there are Tanoim who are more machmir more than Rabbi Yehuda. But in any event, I think it's a fair assumption here in our Mishnah that it's going from the biggest chumrah to the biggest kula, meaning from the smallest shear Rabbi Yehuda kidei litein ben patzim to the largest shear lekula of Rabbi Yossi of a receptacle that could hold a revius. And alternatively, you could say that Rabbi Meir, who's quoted second in that Mishnah, is more mekil than Rabbi Yossi, because he requires lachtos, kidei lachtos bo sa'ar. Maybe he needs a larger shard for that. Now the Mishnah says that we have this machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi about the minimum shear of earthenware with regard to Hotzah, Mistabra Shi'urid Rabbi Yossi Nafish. So the Gemara assumes that Rabbi Yossi is the biggest Mekil, and his shear is the largest. In other words, Rabbi Meir, although he doesn't specify, you know, how much fire he needs here, and he's implying that, in his opinion, a shard could carry perhaps even a single coal, and that's enough to be considered a shear.
and that's a small shard. For Revius, we need a larger shard. So that makes Rav Yossi the biggest makil. So that would support our intuitive understanding that the Mishnah is going from Chomer to Kal. And the biggest makil here is Rav Yossi, the third of the Shitas. So Mikra Shi'ura de Rabbi Meir Nafish. The Gemara is asking a question here because when you look at the Pasuk, it would seem that Adarab, Rabbi Meir Shir, is a larger Shir. Disak and Taitach Shir de Rabbi Yossi Nafish. If you would tell me that the Shir of a Revius is a larger Shir than the Shir of carrying the coal or poking the coal, is then Layatle Bimana Zutra Vahado Layatle Bimana Rabba? Would it be that the Navi, who's giving such tochacha, he starts with the lack of a small utensil, and then he goes to the lack of a large utensil? That doesn't make any sense. It should have been the opposite approach. In other words, the Navi says that the wall will collapse so that a shard would pick up, even a shard small enough or sufficiently large enough to pick up a fire will not be found. And then he continues to say that a shard to scoop up water will not be found. You know, it makes sense to say that the Navi's Tocha is going in intensifying progress. And the second prophecy would be more severe than the first prophecy. So it means that a shard to hold water is smaller than a shard which is enough to move the fire. And that would mean the opposite of what we said, that Shiru de Rabbi Yossi Nafish. So the Gemara gives the following teretz. Omar Abaye, Mastisa Nami Lachtos Eish Miyakida Gidola. In other words, the measure of Rabbi Meir is a larger measure, which means that he's the biggest makil here in this Mishnah, with the largest shear, because he's talking about a shard. What he means is a shard that's large enough to pick up a fire from a large bonfire. In other words, even one single coal, if it's part of a large bonfire, you need a larger shard. And in that sense, Rabbi Meir is more makil, and then we understand the progressive curse of the Navi. So Rabbi Yossi says, Misham Raya, and he rejects this Raya, because the end of the Pasuk says, Lachsof Mayim Migeva. So the Gemara says, Shapir Ka'omalei Rabbi Yossi L'Rabbi Meir. What was Rabbi Meir's intention here, when the Pasuk itself concludes to scoop up water from a hole? So Rabbi Meir says, Lo mi boy ka'amar. We have to sort of twist a little bit of a different twist on the curse of the Navi. And what he was saying, the Navi, was, Lo mi boy midi de chashiv le'inshi de lolish takach el afilu midi de lo chashiv le'inshi lolish kachas le'. In other words, it goes without saying they won't be able to find anything that would be considered significant by people, but even something that wouldn't be considered significant by people, they won't be able to find. And as Rabbi Meir agrees that the shard, which is carrying water, is smaller than a shard that you need to carry a coal from a large bonfire. But the shard needed to carry water is not considered a significant shard. So again, the Navi does mention such a shard that can't even carry water, but that's because he's strengthening his curse by saying that the wall will be broken so utterly, so totally, that even insignificant shards will not be found. And in that sense, we can understand the flow and the progress of the curse of the Navi in Sefer Yeshaya, in castigating the Jewish people, and it goes progressively worse in that sense. But now we're saying, again, defending Abaye, that Rabbi Meir is talking about lachtos eish mi'akida gedola, and that requires a larger shard than the one that's required to hold the revius. And if that be the case, just to summarize, Rabbi Yehuda is the most machmir, and he's talking about a very small shard, and that's enough to be chayiv from Melechus Shabbos. Rabbi Meir, who's the second emish, is the most mekil, and he's talking about large shard that could pick up a large fire from a bonfire. And right down the middle, we have Rabbi Yossi, who would say that something that's smaller than the shard of Rabbi Meir, and it's enough to carry water of Revius, but it's certainly larger than the shear of Rabbi Yehuda of Kedei Litein Bein Patzin Lechavero. That's the middle shita of Rabbi Yossi. Hadron Alecha Hamotzi Yayin. And Yemritz Hashem, in the next shear, we'll begin the ninth parak of Shabbos, Omar Rabbi Akiva, on Daf Pei Beis, Amin Aleph, on the bottom.